Go wild with Nation Gear's end of regular season merch madness sale. Nation Gear is offering our favorite fans 20% off all regular season merch, and we're going to give you free shipping on any orders over $200. Stock up your closet for the playoffs, rep your team, and grab that merch you've been eyeing up all season long. Don't wait. This sale only lasts from April 1st until April 7th. Shop the sale at nationgear.ca.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your host, Terry Nasty Suttermeyer, and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer, Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. This week's guest, 13-year veteran, Stanley Cup champion, and has so much drip that everywhere he goes, there's a flash flood warning. Michael DJ Del Sotto. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Nasty Knuckles. What's happening, Nasty?
What's up, Rig Aurelia? What are you saying, buddy?
This is it. Girls are down. A little peace and quiet.
He's hanging on, man. He's just hanging on. I don't know how. He's been up since six, but...
The trooper.
Yeah, man. Had a little tournament yesterday, golf tournament with our the voice of Nasty Knuckles, Kaz, yes. Vontae, our boy, second year in a row for a great cause at the charity's called Maureen's Mile. You obviously weren't, unfortunately, you couldn't be there. We missed your drives off the tee. You know, we really missed but we had our Nasty Knuckles' close friend Neil Little. Neil Little was with us. Thank the Lord above.
He's a ringer.
He won the overall. He shot he shot three over, but we basically used his ball every. I had a tough day.
He casually puts it nicely down the fairway.
It's ridiculous. I mean, every drive he was just smoking the ball, but great event. And Kaz does a lot for things like that, and he's the man, and we love him. And it was a good day. We did miss you, but you obviously had things prior.
How was Kaz's golf game? Was he rocking the high top chucks?
Bro, it was so hot. He had all black on.
Love you, Kaz.
He had his hair's jet black. He had his black sick bandana on, reminded me a little bit of our boy Broads, but he wears it better than Broads, man. He wears it better than Broads. Well, Broads doesn't have the Motley Crue hair. And then he had his black golf shirt on, and then his black camo shorts with his black golf shoes. And I'm like, why didn't you wear white? And he's like, could you see me wearing white? And I'm like, it would actually be great. I think it'd be a great pick.
Oh, a little curveball for the boys.
Yeah. No one would have believed it. But it's funny how many of the golfers, there's a ton of golfers, and they all know him and love him. And everybody was saying hi. And his dad played in front of us, which was great. He was a trip. So anyway, Flyers started development camp this week.
A little action in the hockey world.
Yeah.
Nice to see. Getting closer.
Yeah, you know, camp's getting closer here, but 40, I don't know, getting really close. Talked to Morgan Frost, and he said they're getting after it pretty good. Yeah, the Frosty Cakes, he's happy. He's healthy. He's feeling good, and he's excited. So, you know, you can't really go over and watch anything that, you know, with the regulations right now. So, yeah, it stinks, but they're working hard. I saw a couple videos, and he said they've been getting after it pretty good. So
yeah, a little different format. Normally, development camps right after the draft. Obviously, COVID and the whole bit. They salvaged it. At least they had one.
Yeah,
I think it's only four days long.
Exactly.
A little 3-on-3 action tomorrow. But yeah, no, it's just one of those things. Just adapt and stay ready, and it's all good. But definitely prefacing the season. So, you know, mentioning that, a couple big signings since we last did this with the hiatus last week, with the biggest one being Coots.
Ooh,
my man Coots with the the big tickie.
You taking the Nasty Knuckle Boys out for Dinsey or what?
Yeah, right.
What's going on, Cootsie? Let's go.
Dang a little carrot or something.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, but I'll tell you what, he's deserving of it, though.
I agree.
He's a hell of a player. I think I read someone said probably, you know, someone said, you know, second best 2-way player in the league behind Bergeron. But I mean, Coots is right.
It's hard. Burge
is still getting it done at his age, but Coots is that. I mean, he's to me. Yeah.
I agree.
I mean,
it's hard to
even
give one and one and two.
Exactly. I can't. I just say they're probably the best 2-way players in the game.
Right.
So congratulations to Coots.
You got
to
lock him up.
Locked him in. He's a flyer, man. I mean, God, I just can't even. He made it when he was 18. Like thinking back, looking at some videos I saw this week. I remember him, like, you could barely get a word out of him. He's just such a quiet kid, but he's a great guy, great teammate, cares so much, wants to win. I love it. I'm really, really happy for him.
Yeah,
it's a big, great signing.
Yeah,
gotta
you have
keep that guy. You
100%. You can't replace that. Nope.
And, you know, picking up Derek Brassard, you know, you're getting him really cheap.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got experience. He's played for, you know, AB.
He got some chemistry with who else there? I guess Atkinson.
Well, he would have played with Hazy.
So
I think it's a great signing. I mean, what do you got to lose really there? You know,
well, it's add some depth for sure. And it's going to, you know, really challenge, you know, a younger guy for a spot, you know. So I think it's good competition. 100%. You got depth. Got some veteran leadership there.
For sure. And then, you know, Sanheim, you know, he got his deal as well. So you locked everybody up. And I mean, it's just a great summer for
really. No excuses this year, boys.
Everyone I've exactly, and everyone I've spoken to, a lot of the guys, and they're really fired up.
I'm pumped going to see what they can do.
I'm pumped that you know, we'll be with the fans of Philly too on the road, and
getting
to see some games on the road and doing stuff here at home too. That's going to be awesome. So
yeah,
I think it's going to be a great year, man.
I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah, lots of good energy around it in so many different ways. So
100%.
Good stuff happening there, and then getting prepped here for our first annual Nasty Knuckles ball hockey tourney with National Ball Hockey League guys. Certainly helping us out big time, and adding our new presenting sponsor, Toby Hockey, which will be rocking. And you introduced me to that. Oh, Scrub Daddy.
What do they have in common? Oh, Scrub Daddy. Our buddies, Aaron Krause and John O'Brien, man, it was great getting to hook up with them, talking about getting all that literally educated on the stick. And it's I think people are going to be shocked when they see what they've come up with. I was fortunate enough over the years to go to basically every stick factory when they were still in Canada.
All right.
and seeing things like the way they made sticks. But as you know, when we were sitting there showing us that process and the videos, man, it's impressive. And with you just sniping with that stick, I think people are going to really know what's up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, you introduced me to the twig, you know, I guess a month ago when I snapped the old Reebok down the middle on a backdoor play. Yeah, the 10-year-old Reebok. And then you slightly handed me the stick, you know, without really explaining what the hell was going on. I was like, do I need to tape this bad boy? And you're like, nope. I was like, all right, two shifts later, two snipes later. Still rocking the Toby, and now we're understanding the science behind this this technology, and I think it's hard for some guys to wrap their head around a stick that you don't have to tape
for sure.
You know, the holes, but the durability, the feel. I mean, I think this thing is going to challenge the stick market. Moving forward, I think guys just have to get over that hump of what it looks like, but the feel, man, the feel is there. And not that I'm a good judge of that, but they're the rock hands. But nonetheless, I definitely could use that on and off the ice, no question.
Yeah, the funny thing is to see in the videos that we were fortunate enough to, like, he showed us with legitimate players. I mean, not that you are. I mean, let's face it, you played in the NHL. I know we make fun and say crazy shit, but the people that did test the stick were like, whoa. But like we said to Aaron, like the thing in hockey is guys are worried about getting chirped. And right? You have the waffle blade, but once you feel it and you see what's going on there and the technology, I mean, it's pretty amazing, man. It really is.
I would have loved to have gotten chirped for that stick back in the day. I would have just given me more ammo to go
keep guys
accountable. It's like you chirping my twig. It was like, remember back in the day with John Sim in practice, we were at the Phantoms when he was chirping my bad blade. Remember? Yeah. He was like, you got a shitty blade. Look at that stick.
At least you didn't beat me up.
I was like, I had enough of you chirping my blade, buddy. And I grabbed him and beat the pants off him in front of Homer and Clarkie and everyone, all the brass standing and watching practice the one day. He's like, what? I was just joking. I was just chirping your stick. I'm like, you never lay off, buddy. But, you know,
they're good ammo. Yeah, exactly. That's funny. I mean, like, we've told that story 100 times. First time I saw it, I wasn't sure if you were right-handed or left-handed because I hadn't seen you play yet. But
when you're tough, you could use any stick. And then you just got to, if someone wants to chirp, right. you got to answer the bell. And you can't chirp if you're not willing to answer the bell.
That's right, man. but I think and we saw a certain player. I'll say the name, but there's a player in NHL, pretty big name. We got to see his stick, and man, I hope he uses it because I want to see
like
what happens with all the testing we saw. It's really interesting.
It is really wild. How about that one video that he showed with the stick that was like in the vise and they ripped a slap shot over 100 miles an hour at the tip of the stick blade and the puck broke in pieces, not the stick blade. I mean, that was like, I couldn't believe that. Like, I've never seen anything like that. Like the durability, obviously the shaft itself will obviously break before the blade ever breaks, but you could use that easily. I could use that thing for 5 years straight, probably. Durability of that thing.
You just choose your last one and it was a piece of shit. So,
I mean, on and off the ice, that's interchangeable.
Yeah, right. No, it's really neat and interesting. I've talked to a couple guys about it. They're getting samples made. Yeah.
Cool. So, yeah, they should. Get out of your comfort zone. It's lighter.
Yeah, man.
It's got good balance too. I mean, for anybody that's into that kind of stuff, but all good. Yeah. Appreciate the support, Toby. Happy to be a partner and look forward to bringing you around the hockey rink, scoring some goals.
I probably won't score, but I'm going to be holding it anyway. Maybe that's good. They might ask me not to use it in the men's league.
You're all Swedish, Nast. You're all Swedish.
Oh man. Good guys. Awesome guys.
Yeah. Awesome guys. Yeah.
All right, Riggs, let's get into this week's episode number 38 with our boy, Michael Delzato. We, Easy. we took the, Yeah, Big DZ. We took the week off for Jimmy Hayes, the tragedy, you know, the hockey world knows about from last week. Just want to do that out of respect for him and his family, and, you know, all his friends, which he had many, like we said before. So let's get into that episode. This guy, Michael Delzato, anytime he steps into the arena, there's you got to wear high waters because he's always saying there's floods. So anyway, let's get into that episode, Riggs.
Let's do it. Welcome back to another episode of Nasty Knuckles. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Suttlemeyer. And this week, we're so happy to have my good buddy, our good buddy, Mr. DJ Delzato. DZ, what's up, brother?
What's happening, fellas? Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Oh, man. Thanks for carving out the time. You're a busy man. You're a busy man. It's tough to track you down, buddy.
Traveling the world, man. Mr. 305. I'm taking over for Pitbull now.
I love it. Oh, man. Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're back in Toronto training?
Yeah, I came back mid-July once the quarantine was lifted. I was enjoying some time off in the off season. I traveled a little bit. I was in Miami for a bit, New York to see my nephew, Bahamas. I was trying to enjoy some type of normalcy with how crazy last season was and being, you know, kind of cooped up in an apartment the whole year and not being able to do anything. So I was trying to make up for the social life and travel a bit. And now I'm back in Toronto grinding away, getting ready for my 13th NHL season.
It's yeah, crazy, well, man.
And only, it's hard to and believe. Only 31 years old. I mean, you're young, really, 31 years young. I mean, I'm a couple years older than you now, but yeah. You know how that goes. I don't count mine anymore. I'm so old. But yeah, Roz, we were talking a little bit about you, DZ. I was telling him you are like a fitness, like, I don't want to say expert, but dude, like, you know how to take care of body. You always, since I've known you, that's one of the biggest things. That's a reason probably why you're still playing. 13 years, a long time to play in NHL, and especially being a D-man. Riles probably has a lot of questions about that, and as well as your diet, which you two both have a lot in common. I don't think you're jumping into any Chick-fil-A most days or anything like that.
I actually can't tell you the last time I've had fast food. I've kind of stuck with this you know, high protein, high fat, you know, like keto diet, no carbs. Even during the season, I'll really only have carbs on game day for really? A pregame meal. I intermittent fast every day. I don't really have a big appetite in the morning, so that certainly helps. And then you get it, like anything, you get into a routine and it just becomes easy. So, you know, there's still days, more so the summer, we'll have my cheat days, you know, like every weekend or every other weekend. I love candy. That's my big one. I love sour candy. I love sweets, but I was a little chubbier when I was in junior, and it was my draft year actually. Cause back then, like, we didn't have nutritionists. We didn't know anything about diet. We just kind of played, worked out. We didn't even have a trainer at that time in junior. So every morning I was having two s'mores Pop-Tarts before I'd go to school. And I just thought, okay, like, breakfast is the most important meal. I was putting something in my system, not thinking I was just throwing dog shit in right. And then my draft year, I was right around combine time. So at the end of the year, I think I was 211, 13 or 14% body fat. And then from that time, at whatever it was, May to training camp in September, I dropped down to 188, 6% body fat. So it was a huge summer for me.
Wow.
A lot of it training, but most of it, I'd say 80, 90% was just nutrition. And from then on, I basically told myself I would never let myself go again. And there's been little tweaks here and there in my diet, and I've found something that works for me. And, you know, going into now, as you said, year 13, having that consistency and building, I guess, this portfolio of what my body expects, it actually has allowed me to have a few more cheat days than usual. You know, the last year or so, especially COVID, last year being stuck at home before the season, sorry, there was definitely more cheat days than there were in past years. But just because I've done it for so many years, it's allowed my body to cheat a little bit more.
Yeah, that's impressive. I mean, playing in the NHL and doing keto seems to be Well, you have to be, yeah, you have to know what you're doing and very calculated, right? Did you find when you first started doing that you maybe lacked some energy or robbing energy?
There was times where I lacked some energy. I found that there was a midpoint for a few seasons where I felt like I was hitting the wall. And I don't think that was so much the nutrition as it was overtraining. I started with Matt Nichol 6 or 7 years ago. And he had this amazing saying for me was, you can keep hammering the gas, but if the tank's empty, you're not going anywhere. So, you know, I was training, you know, 3-4 times a day. And, you know, did I look good when I looked in the mirror? Yeah, absolutely. But at the same time, come December, I had nothing left in the tank. And that second half of the season was tough for me to, it felt like it was a much tougher grind than it should have been. And then as far as the diet, you fine tune it here and there. Increasing the healthy fats has been the biggest thing for me, is not always just crushing protein, as you need to throw in the healthy fats to use as your energy source. And I'm like Nasty said, like as much as I enjoy fitness and nutrition, I'm a bit of a nerd when it comes to it. Like I truly enjoy it. Like I think it's great knowing, it's great seeing the results. Sorry. Right. It's you do all these things to help, the longevity of your career, or to feel good, look good, is definitely a big part of it too. You know, when you're in warm climate, taking your shirt off, it's definitely a nice,
right. A little bonus.
People give you the elevator from a penthouse to P1. But it's something I truly enjoy. And when you see results, like anything, when you put the hard work in, that's the best part about it.
Yeah. And the way you feel, obviously. Right. I mean, it's like, it's got to convert, and you got to feel the energy. Otherwise, it's defeating the purpose, especially for what you're trying to accomplish. Right. I mean, I think a lot of guys go through these, I guess phases of trying to find that next level. Right. I mean, trying to find that edge, and a lot of guys struggle with it. Right. Cause I mean, you're talking about eating s'mores in junior. I mean, it was like the world of chicken and pasta. That was it. Right. You don't even talk about fats, you know, and then now you're talking about essentially starving yourself of carbohydrate and essentially leaning on fats, which most people have a hard time wrapping their head around. And how you can convert that, not just looking good in a shirt and or without the shirt, but actually into performance on ice is pretty impressive, because it takes a lot of, discipline, obviously.
Yeah. Some of the, like you said, always looking for that extra edge, but some of it, you have some guys that are always tweaking. It's like every 6 months or every season, making these, not just tweaking, but making these big adjustments. And it takes time for your body to adjust to different diets, nutrition, working out, different fitness programs. For me, it's keeping it consistent. I think you get to the point now at 31 years old, I'm not going to get much stronger, faster, quicker, but how can I stay healthy is the biggest thing. And like you said, feeling good would probably be the biggest, concern of mine, is feeling good and staying healthy throughout a full season.
And then are you able to notice, as far as recovery goes, are you recovering faster, quicker regeneration, stuff like that?
Yeah,
as well?
That's another big thing too, is like when you're looking around the locker room or even the other team, and you're seeing you get into the third period or overtime or bag skate practices or testing, and you're seeing guys really struggling and you still feel good. That's when you know that what you're doing is the right thing and it's paying off.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, just signed a nice 2-year deal in Ottawa. Congratulations.
Yeah, man. Congrats.
That's awesome, man. What are your thoughts going in there? Have you been able to like talk to DJ or, you know, I'm sure you have, but what are your feelings there?
Yeah. I talked to DJ. I've known him a little bit. I don't know a ton of players. That's when you know it's a young team, when you don't know many guys on the team. So I'm coming in. I think I'm the oldest guy at 31, which is crazy.
Wow.
But I'm
Why
the
is team's that?
Training. Yeah, the team's trending in the right direction. You saw the second half of their season last year was very impressive. I love the way DJ coaches. He's got that old school mentality, very similar to Torts in a way. So I'm excited for that, because you just don't see that much more in the league anymore. And it's definitely more enjoyable to play for a coach like that.
Yeah, they've got so last year's draft pick was a buddy of mine who's you probably met Mark Gregg. His son was draft pick last year. First round, he's a scout for the Flyers, and then Brian Boucher's son this year. Talk about making someone feel old. Like, fuck, this kid's running around the locker room, man. Actually, Gregor had already left the Flyers when Ritter was born, so it really makes me feel old. But Yeah, it seems to be an exciting time right now because, like you said, the second half of the year was really good, and they got a lot of good, nice young players, man. And then we were talking to Chief, you know, he was on the show a while back, but he was talking about how important he felt you were to the team. Obviously, you didn't play a whole lot there, but he said what you did off the ice with the extra guys and the younger players was huge for them. He said that a couple times, to be honest with you. So I know they're looking for you to be a leader, obviously, not just because of your age, but the way you handle yourself, the way that you take care of yourself and being a good pro.
It's that's like the mentorship role is something I've enjoyed though. Like you get older and you know, I'm 31. I still, you know me, like I still act like I'm 21. I love having fun around the room. I'm rarely serious. So with the young guys, that added enthusiasm and energy in the room and being able to, you know, it's contagious. So being able to have that, and I think me show that as a young guy also brings the energy and enthusiasm for them as well. It's a two-way street. And, you know, you look at some of the leaders, our young guys on Ottawa, but they're still, I'm a firm believer that you have to go through certain scenarios and you have to have that experience to really grow as a leader of a hockey club. So I'm looking forward to helping those guys learn that way, not just on the ice, but off the ice as well, and how to be a pro and how to be, give your best every single day and not let down your teammates.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and I know one thing is a definite, DJ Delzato will have the radio. You had it years ago in Philadelphia. I would have a little bit of rock and roll, more of a rock and roll guy. I said to DZ one time, Ross, I'm like, do you listen to any rock? He's like, what's that? He kind of laughs, right? So then I'm like, here, let me show you this. I think you'll like Stone Temple Pilots. Everybody knows that's like one of my favorite. I'm like, Scotty Weiland, one of the best front men ever, you know, passed away a few years ago. So I'm showing it to him, and he watched for about 5 seconds. He's like, yeah, okay. So he takes my thing off anyway. So he's got his music going, and he makes his own music, which you could talk about a little bit, DZ. But so the funny thing was a couple of days later, you know, I had said Scott Weiland from STP. He comes in the room, rips my phone right off the thing. He's one of the first guys. He was like you, Riggs, but not 10 cups of black coffee by 4:30. He wasn't quite
a little
that
calmer.
A little calmer. But he would come in, put the music, get the music going. And I said, well, at least let the song finish before you change it. And he says, I can't stand that Johnny Dewey stuff. Johnny Dewey. So I always fuck around like Scotty Weiland. I said, Scotty Dub, you know, and he goes, yeah, Johnny Dewey, Scotty Dub, whatever, man. I'm like, good God, man.
I'm not a huge rock guy, but it was Philly's kind of where my music took off. My first year there, like I was one of the only single guys, and I went through a stretch of like, I'd come back from practice and it'd be, you know, 1 p.m. and I'd watch Netflix for like 5-6 hours and I'd cook. And I watch more Netflix and I go to bed. I'm like, fuck, like, this is like, I need to do something more productive with my life here. And this is, you know, I'm developing bad habits. I've always loved music. Some of my, you know, good friends are, you know, Tiesto, some of the, you know, probably the best DJ of all time.
Not a big deal.
But getting to watch these guys perform live and then in studio, learning from them, and like anything, practice makes perfect. But my passion for music, what I think is so cool, is it's an international language. Doesn't matter where in the world you are, what's going on in your life, music has the ability to put a smile on your face, to make you dance or feel good about yourself. And as we talked about before the show, every day there's the media, is everything is so fucking negative. The news, all it is negativity, negativity, negativity. Whereas you have that option to, or that ability to put a smile on someone's face or make them feel good about themselves or dance and get their mind off whatever shit they may have going on in their life, I think is so cool. So that's the biggest thing I've taken from music.
Some people don't know you're a little bit of a sax player too.
Oh yeah. Wow.
That's really cool.
I play the alto sax as well. It's my favorite instrument. I think the coolest, my favorite music is like a deep house beat with the sax in the back, or like more of like a loungy beat where you're at like a nice supper club, sipping on tequila on the rocks and just checking out the talent rolling in. Like that's the atmosphere.
Well calculated.
That sounds like fun, actually.
Yeah, right. I really thought about that, like, but yeah, I like
not
that
a bad day right there. Again, you know, Ron Burgundy was a big jazz guy. You
know? Yeah. I'm not prepared.
Pull it out. Oh, man. But yeah, he's that stuff's cool to me. Like, I've seen, obviously, right when you started doing all that stuff and then seeing some of the videos, and God, I don't even know how to work that. It's like me trying to watch Elvis play these video games and his fucking hands are going like this, and there's 25 buttons and you got all that shit. But it turns out awesome. I love that kind of stuff. It's really cool because I love music. I love just about everything. Country makes me a little bit of a nervous twitch if I hear too much of it. But
yeah,
not a big country guy, but I like some of it. But anyway, so the last couple of years I kind of forgot about the year you did go to St. Louis and is a Stanley Cup champion, by the way. DZ, you were on three teams that year. I forgot about that.
It was a crazy, that was a crazy year. So I had a really good year. I signed a 2-year deal in Vancouver. I had a great year. My first year, played all 82 games. The first time in my career, stayed healthy, which was great. And I was like one of three defensemen. I think it's like one of 10 in the last like decade that averaged, I think it was like three hits a game and two blocks a game. So like some crazy stat. I had a phenomenal year. And then the next year I came to camp and I was like all of a sudden kind of like in and out of the lineup. And it was really bizarre. The team was getting younger and they didn't really give me any notification or idea or I guess heads up that was going to happen. So I was pretty taken back, especially with the year I had before. So it was kind of in and out of the lineup. I got traded to Anaheim, which was a very short stint, but an amazing opportunity for me. I was playing with Cam Fowler, and to me, he was probably my best D partner that I've played with. We just saw the game the same way. The chemistry was there immediately. It just made the game so easy. Our IQ was not the same. Every situation we read was the same. So it was almost like we didn't even have to talk to each other there, where the game would just take care of itself, which it makes it so easy, especially as a D-man. Your partner is your eyes and ears at all times. And then we lost back-to-back divisional games probably a week before the deadline, which put us, I think, 8 or 9 points back. And sure enough, I got traded. I think we were in Vancouver. The trade deadline was noon. So I go on the ice for morning skate. I give my phone to the trainer. I'm like, hey, you know, if it rings, let me know. I get off the ice. It's 12 o'clock. I'm like, fuck, thank God. Like, didn't get a call. I'm good. Was loving living in Newport Beach. Everything about it was great. Oh,
that's not much fun.
Yeah. And then like 12:05 comes and I get a call from Bob Murray. And he's like, yeah, we traded you to St. Louis. And I knew there was other teams sniffing around and St. Louis wasn't one of them. And then sure enough, 2 seconds later, Alex Pietrangelo calls me, who's one of my childhood best buddies. And sure enough, we're reunited. I go there and like you mentioned, didn't play a whole lot. I guess the good and the bad was, you know, no one really got hurt. So it didn't give me an opportunity, but as we know, you need to have depth come playoff time, especially on the back end to make a run. And it was a great experience. It wasn't fun not playing. It certainly hurt my contract the next year, but I worked my ass off every single day. You know, the guys that were in the lineup, you know, a lot of the older guys, you know, pulled me aside at the end of the year once we won and said, you know, it was impressive the work ethic I put in, knowing that if someone did get hurt, they'd feel comfortable with me coming in. So that was, you know, I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it because it was nice. I hadn't really said much, but when it was all said and done and being able to lift the Stanley Cup and knowing I put a ton of work in, even when no one was watching, you know, I'd be on the ice an hour before practice every single day, just wanted to stay ready. Cause you know, as you guys know, as a kid, that's what you dream of is winning the Stanley Cup. And that's the furthest I'd ever gone. And I wanted to make sure I was ready and wanted to make sure the coaches and players knew I was ready if that opportunity did arise.
Yeah. Well, like I said, Chief saw it. You probably felt like no one notices, you know, like when you're doing all that stuff, but he sure did because like I said, he brought it up a couple times to me and you know, he always liked you anyway.
Well, yeah, you obviously had to lobby for him to get him there. Yeah, right. He was probably the biggest reason why you showed up there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Knowing you're a pro and you take care of yourself and you're a good example for the young guys and you kept a good attitude, obviously, which is super important. Speaking of
the music thing was funny there. Cause I'd always be there early. As you know, Nast. And, so I'd be crank because at that time too, you get into like May and then even into June and you're like, you know, I hadn't played for 2 months and I'm still working out like an animal every single day. And you're looking for any type of extra edge. So I have my music just cranked. You can't even hear yourself think. And Jay Boatmeester is like such a quiet guy, doesn't say boo, and isn't really into that type of music. And I remember one day he just came in and pulled me aside. He's like, hey, like, can you fucking turn that down? You know, it's like driving him nuts. I'd shut the door to the gym in hopes that it would keep it quiet, yeah. But it'd be blasting through the locker room and it would drive him nuts every day. But I was looking for any type of edge just to get me through these workouts to keep grinding.
He's probably more of a country guy.
Definitely.
100%. Yeah. J-Bo.
Yeah. J-Bo.
That's funny. Speaking of coaches, we were talking about earlier, you've had Torts twice. And I know, obviously, we talk a lot, you and I, and I had asked, I think I told you this, Riles, I had asked, is like, how's Torts? Because I've worked with Torts a few times with USA Hockey, and not as a player, obviously, but obviously he's a fiery individual, always, you know, always has been. But it was amazing just the human that he is. I mean, just we've talked about this before with Scotty Hartnell, a couple other people. He's just the guy would go out of his way in the morning to come say good morning. Hey, do you need anything? This and that. But I had asked DZ earlier in the year. I'm like, hey, how's Torts doing? He's like, dude, he's like calmed down like so much, right? Like I was like shocked.
He calmed down, but part of it was, I think, him getting older and realizing you can't be that way anymore with how many young guys are in the league now and how they're soft.
Exactly.
Guys, young guys, their opportunities aren't earned, they're given. And to me, that breeds this unfortunate culture where hockey is normally known for this amazing culture. And it's definitely changed.
Yeah, entitlement.
Yeah, exactly. Entitlement is ridiculous. And so part of that is Torts changing, but also me, you know, I had him at 19. I came in the league as, an offensive defenseman, didn't know fuck all about defending, you know, just won. I was in New York City. It was like showtime. And
We
talked about I had so much swagger, which I did. But I have him to thank for making him the defenseman I am today. You know, were there times where I couldn't fucking stand the guy when I was younger? 100%. But looking back, he made me into an all-around defenseman and more importantly, turned me into a man. There are so many life lessons with him that I learned along the way, some hockey-related, some life-related. And I wish I had him my whole career. I was so happy to play for him again last year. And it was so refreshing to see that his style of coaching was still in the league. Cause as I mentioned before, it doesn't exist anymore where he doesn't give a fuck if you're making $10 million, league minimum, 35, 18. If you deserve to play, you'll play. He's all he wants to do is win. Yeah. And he doesn't care about the politics. It's his way or you're gone. And I truly love that about him because we had, Patrick Laine came in last year and they didn't see eye to eye right away because he's pretty fucking lazy and Torts wasn't having. He's like, I don't care what you do offensively. If you're going to be a liability defensively, this team doesn't go anywhere.
Right.
So I respect the way he coaches. And as you said, him as a human being, which a lot of guys don't see, you know, the media has a field day with him because he gives them quite a bit.
Yeah.
But he is an amazing, amazing human being. So genuine. The biggest heart of anyone I know. And even, now in the summer, we still talk frequently and he's always there. Like you said, if there's anything you need, call me. He's always there for you. He's always a phone call away. And I wish more people, he doesn't care, which I also respect about him. He doesn't care what people who don't know him think about him.
Right.
But I wish more people, the people that talk shit about him, I wish they knew who he was as a human being and as a person. And they would shut their mouths pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I think he kind of likes it like that. You know, a little street cred, like you're the crazy ass. And you know what I mean? He always kind of thinks that's how he is. I think that's what it seems like anyways, because Hartsey said a lot of the same stuff you're saying is like almost like just like the most genuine human where, I think Hartsey's brother was in town and Torts comes along and is so nice to Hartsey, and Hartsey had been scratched for a few games or whatever the hell the story was. And then Hartsey's brother is like, this is the Torts you're talking about, that
this guy's like the nicest guy ever.
Maybe it's you, but no, it's good to know. I think that's the stuff that people do need to hear for sure, because The media obviously just runs with his antics, and you know, he's a passionate guy, but you know, behind the passion, there's obviously a heart, which is, you know, important to exactly. talk about.
Yeah, he wants to win as much, if not more, than the players, and he wears his heart on his sleeve. And you know, is he a lot sometimes? Yes, but if you understand that he's doing it just to help you, he's doing it to help you and the team. And what I don't understand is when people talk about, oh, like he's ruining a player or he's ruining the team. Like, why would he do that? Why would someone ruin a player? Because if you ruin a player, it hurts the team, and then it hurts his chances at holding his job. Right? It makes no sense. You're just unfortunately the uneducated people that still do exist in the media that are talking and have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah. And there's just a little more strategy probably behind his pushing, right? I mean, I think you said you had him when he was 19, when you were 19 years old, and that's a long time ago in the grand scheme of coaching and the philosophy and how to push guys, right? I mean, it goes from that age of just like push to now it's like more, you know, the more teaching involved and, you know, real communication. And you have to evolve to stay in the league as a player and a coach. But I think the biggest thing is the communication, how you're delivering the message, right? Because you said like these young guys, they're entitled and they don't do well with, you know, even constructive criticism, let alone just like you're ripping on a guy for a little bit just because you need to and they need to hear it. But, you know, it's whether you call it softening up or just adapting to just the ways of communication, it has to happen. Otherwise, you find yourself outside of the league.
That's what was cool this year for me was how everything kind of came full circle, right? I was 19 and I was learning these lessons through him, and we had a younger team this year, and I was seeing how he would treat some younger guys, and I was like, fuck, if only I understood then what I knew now. But I guess that's with anything, right? As you mature and experience and you learn the hard way. And we would joke so often this year or last season, sorry. And even through meetings, he would use me as an example with guys. And it was really fun and enjoyable for me to see the other side of it, like coming out the other end where learning the life lessons that he taught me. And I think it was cool for him too. We talk about it often, was he was, you know, really proud of me, not just as a hockey player, but as a man, to see how far I've come and how far I've matured. And he's still teaching those lessons today. And you know, we had a guy this year that missed a practice because he had like the sniffles or something. It wasn't COVID because we were tested every single day. And we just like kind of shake our heads. And he's like, see what I feel. And we just kind of like, sometimes he wouldn't even have to say anything. We'd look at each other like, oh, fuck. Like, I remember this, you know?
Yeah.
So it, this season was awesome for that. That I got to really see things through and be reunited with him. And I wish every young player had Torts or a coach like Torts early on in their career, because I truly think it would help them later on. And it would certainly bring that culture back that, you know, we enjoyed that used to exist.
I remember DZ, I had met Torts. He was one of the coaches at the Olympics. He was assistant to Ron Wilson. Wilson. And there was maybe in the first game of the Olympics, we're holding on to a 2-1 lead. And he's the assistant coach while Ryan Callahan's on the team. Okay, we got a 2-1 lead. There's like a minute and a half to go. And Wills throws Phil Kessel out. I love Phil, but he's not a defensive specialist by any means, right? And I remember I just laughed because I was in shock at first, and then I laughed after the game because, like I said, it's under 2 minutes ago, and Torts and poor Callie's like embarrassed. He's got Callie by the back of his jersey, pulling him off the bench and going, "What the fuck, Wills? Get this guy on the ice. It's a fucking minute and a half, you know." And Wilson's like, "We're fine, you know." And he's like, "No, we're not. This kid can't play D." Like it was like I'm like, we're at the Olympics. Is this fucking happening? Right. And then they're laughing, you know, obviously they're good buddies and laughing after the game. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, you know, like, and then I get to work with him a few more times with USA Hockey. But God, like you said, man, it's funny. Like he just wants to win.
Yeah. That's it.
Like, to me,
can't blame him.
I'm old school from when I played sports. I never played hockey, but being in hockey for 25 years, like, fuck, the guy just wants to win, man.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's a lot. You're pushing. It's kind of like Labby. There's a lot of, you know, but fuck, they just want to win, you know? And
but like we had spoken about before, it's like he pushes you to the brink, but you realize though later on, once you get through, like his training camps are legendary. Everyone talks about them, like how hard they are. And that's his thing. He doesn't give a shit about preseason. He wants his teams to be in the best shape, because he knows come December, come January, February, you're making that playoff push. His whole team is in the shape and they're going to be fine, where other teams are now start to deteriorate. Yeah. And then he's able to take over. So his teams, you know, when I had him in New York, we had really good teams. We were playing playoff hockey come start October. Like the whole year we played playoff hockey, and we didn't have the most skilled teams. We had some high end talent, but not the most skilled. But every year we would beat the shit out of teams, and that was our style. And he knew, you know, we would roll teams over just by being in shape, and we play a hard nosed game and teams couldn't keep up with us.
Right. Yeah. That was, I think, well, I remember you like as a player, obviously I'd seen you play, but 2011, 2012, because of the HBO series.
Yeah.
So everybody's watching, you know, you're still a young kid then. So it's just kind of funny. I think I sent you a picture a while back where you got zippered up there.
Yeah.
It's just so funny. Like then a few years later, we get, you know, fortunate enough to get to become good friends with you and have you as a player for a few years. And Riggs, I got to tell you this about him though. He is things have to be specific.
Oh yeah.
Properly.
It's, is that like, also known as high maintenance or what?
It's almost, yeah. It's, but I'll tell you this. I always would bust his balls. It was, once it was done, it was fine. You never hear a word. But it was so funny, like with his shell, I'll never forget. But it took me 3 times to get this fucking. It was, I felt like a tailor, yeah. Like his suit, like this guy's fresh dress. We all know that it's the heavy drip with DZ.
Yeah,
you know. So his gear had to be that way too. Wasn't really anything more than that, to be honest. We had to make some alterations to your shinies, which makes sense because you got 110 mile an hour. Slap shots coming out. But I just remember
I still wear those shin pads too.
Do you?
Wow. The goalie pads and you guys made me. Yeah.
We have a friend of ours, this cool girl in Toronto. I sent her a video one time. We were in Vegas and I just did it to mess around with her, but like I always had to tightened up DZ's his sleeves so they were, you know, perfect, like right on the shin or elbows. And so I just made a video of me doing it going, hi, maintenance, you know, like, and then I turned a jersey over to Stella's photo. She's like, oh my God. But no, he was like, DZ's just, you know, so polite and he was never an issue, but it was just funny. I used to like to bust his balls about being high maintenance, even though he really wasn't that bad at all.
I can admit I am a little bit, but like you said, once it's done, it's done. Like I need to get to a certain point where like it feels comfortable. The big thing for me, which I mean, is so much better now. Like I used to be brutal for that. Was like, if I get any, I used to get nicks on my skates all the time, right? And I have to get like bricks or to sharpen them. Whereas now you have the ones, the holders that, you change them out, which is amazing. So if only we had them back then, certainly would have helped a lot. Yeah. But like you said, there's, once it's done, it's done. But there is, but then too, like we had the third jerseys, we had so many different, changing every week. As soon as you get into something comfortable, like,
what is this? How many sets of gear do we have?
Yeah. Well, that was part of the problem too. It wasn't even,
we told that story about, prongs.
Man, prongs. Yeah.
And, I tricked the big motherfucker. I got him. We told a story that day. I won't get into it, but basically, he's like, I don't wear 2 sets of gear. And I'm like, okay, what am I going to do? Argue with a guy first day's there. But the funny thing was he came in with nothing. So he needed all new gear. So I'm like, I'm going to get him. So every day, the first day he skates, hang his gear, let it dry, put the second set up because it's brand new, right? So he wears it the next day. I flip-flopped it for 2 weeks. So he comes in off the ice. We're leaving. We're going on the road. I think our first game, we were headed to Carolina. And he says, hey, fool. He called me fool all the time. Where's my bag, fool? I said, oh, you're all packed up. He goes, what do you mean? I got my gear on. I was like, oh, no, that's your second set, bro. He was like, what? And I said, you've been wearing 2 sets of gear for 3 weeks. He goes, you little fuck. He goes, okay. It was easy. But he's like, oh, got me, man. But, yeah, it's so funny how a lot of you players, like, some guys are good with it. Some guys are not. They're just like, how many set? I remember guys coming to Philly because we had like four helmets.
Yeah.
Like, and every day, like, so guys matched. I had the black helmet that's at home. Then we had a black helmet for the third jerseys. Then we had a white helmet for road games, and then a white helmet for practice. And I remember Kevin Hayes going, holy fuck, how many helmets do we wear here? He goes, I could just wear the same. I'm like, no, man, you got and gloves. Oh my God. Yeah. And G is a guy, Claude Giroux is a guy. I would hide his gloves all the time because he would never put new ones on. So I'd hide him. He'd be screaming, getting so fucking mad at me. And at the games, I would try to do it, but then he'd be like, hey, like, where are my gloves?
I need a right here.
But yeah, well,
then you've got the complete other side, the opposite, where you got Jakey would wear his skates right out of the box, which is like serial killer move. Like, when you get them,
right? No,
it would toss them on for a game. And it was
100%.
So it's amazing how you have guys that are so low maintenance and then high maintenance. And then it's hopefully somewhere in between you get most of the guys.
Yeah. And but it's talking about Jake there. I can at least think of at least 4 to 5 times where, like, usually, so if we went on a, say, a 3-game road trip, I would have 3 brand new pair of skates for the road. Plus the ones he's wearing have probably been worn a game or two, right? He was going through 40 to 50 pairs of skates. And he literally came off the ice after warm up. Like DZ said, he wouldn't heat them. He just put them on, just put laces in them and put them on and go. He'd come up there. He goes, that's it. I need another pair of fucking skates. These suck. I'm like, they're right out of the box. He goes, fucking throw them away. They fucking suck. I can't wear them. So he'd put a brand new pair on and go out for the first period. I'm like, I don't know how you're doing that. Not even put them on the Hydroc, man.
Yeah. Nothing. Right out of the box.
Crazy.
Sounds like a stretching routine.
Yes. Yeah. It's
like, or lack of. Lack of.
He can't touch his toes, fucking Jake. But the funny thing is, he was like so hard on skates, but he'd go through 18 sticks in a season.
Yeah.
The only way he broke was on the boards.
Oh, yeah.
He's pissed off with everybody yelling, shoot. Yeah. Cut the fuck off. He's behind the bench. Now he's going back to Columbus, DZ.
I know. He's one exciting. Of the most, like, unique, like, awesome guy, but like so many unique things that he does that makes him so special. And he's still, you know, like putting him skates on fresh out of the box, and he's still, you know, getting better on the ice every
day. Yeah, right. The fastest guy.
Yeah.
He's powerful.
Yeah.
The way he skates, unbelievable.
The simple guy, sounds like. Doesn't need to work out, doesn't need to. Yeah, breaking his skates.
Plays hockey.
Get out there and play hockey, man.
Yeah.
Life. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what he does too. That's exactly it, man. I talked to him last week, I think, and he's pretty excited about a new, you know, obviously he's been started in Columbus, but I think he just needed a change. He was ready for it. So he's really excited. He says I'm like getting into shape, and I'm like,
yeah.
So you're Are you like working out? Like, now?
He's got that chip on his shoulder, right? Where he's got
100%.
As we know about him, like, he is very competitive, and so I think that, I'm excited to see what he does.
Yeah, me too.
Special player.
Man. Wish him all the best for sure, man.
Yeah, I think he needed out of Philly probably last year.
Yeah.
Give him some fresh blood over there, and let him buck a little bit.
Yeah.
For different coaches,
DZ, you would know better than me. I mean, they lost Foligno. Are there any other veteran presence? I think Savard's gone. Atkinson's gone. Billy, yeah.
Jones is gone. I'm gone. Right. Savard's gone. Boone Jenner would be like the next one.
Boone. Will he be the captain, would you say?
Yeah, maybe. Gus Nyquist is there as an older guy.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They lost a lot of guys just through last year through trade and going down, you know, that rebuilding route.
Yeah. Brad Larson's new coach there. Did you get along with him well?
Yeah, he's great. He's very similar to Torts in his values, just not as he's definitely much more patient than Torts is. His values as far as how he coaches, the way the team needs to play, is very similar. You know, he learned from Torts for numerous years since his whole time in Columbus. And he'll say himself, like, he's so grateful for the opportunity to learn under Torts. And again, as we spoke about, not just as a coach, but as a human being, You know, he gets emotional just when you talk about it, because he's an amazing person, and he's very humbled and is, again, grateful for the opportunity that he was given. Because, again, it's to learn from under Torts, and he's not just always pushing you. He is, and out of all the coaches I've had, I've had a good chunk of them. Defensively, he is the best coach that I've played for, as far as structure, systems, even penalty kill. You know, we had those years, and even when he was in Columbus, you know, it's still in the Metro Division, playing Washington, which always had the best power play, and even Tampa. He always found ways. That was like his pride. He'd always find ways to shut those teams down where other teams couldn't do it. So he is a very smart coach. He's not just about the motivating and the, you know, the grinding and giving 110%. There is a lot of brains that he does that a lot of people may not see.
Right. And speaking of their power plays, it's funny. Like, everybody's like, You know where Ovi's going to be. Yeah, you do, but he still puts in 50. Yeah, right. It doesn't matter that everyone on the ice knows. One way or another, he's going to get it. And if he doesn't, you got to Osh in the slot. So where are you going to go?
That's what really changed it for them, whereas everyone's talked about Ovi. But then you had, whatever, 2 years ago, where, you know, Carlson, too, who's got a bomb from up top. The thing is, you have Backstrom can distribute the puck.
He's so underrated.
That's off, down low. Like, you have just everyone compliment. Like, everyone compliments each other, and they're in perfect positions for how that power play is set up. So you can't shut everything down.
It's impossible. But that's awesome. Good for him, man. I don't know him, but I saw him as a player when he was in the American League in Hershey there, and never really have met him or anything. But just wondered your thoughts. So that's cool. Good for him, man. Hopefully they are successful, especially with Jakey going there. He gets a load of Jakey.
Jakey's got a few good years left in him. I think he just needed a little change of scenery. It's always good for a player to change up the environment, especially if it gets stale. I mean, Jakey, how long is he in Philly? 10 years? I mean, it's a long stint.
I can't believe it. I mean, I can, but God, does it go by quick, hey, DZ? Because fuck you, even like, look how quick it goes by, man. Like, we were neighbors. Like, DZ lived a couple blocks over from me, man. It was awesome. Walk to the baseball stadium. Actually, your nephew was with us. Remember that day?
I was just gonna tell you. Remember the time we walked to the stadium? Yeah,
man, dude. One of the funniest things. So first of all, Mike meets us. It's actually on my Instagram way back. This is when he was playing here. And we went to the baseball. I don't even know if we went into the gate. I think we just stayed in the in the bar there, just you know, watching everything go on and having a good time. But so I was always busted. You know, the ladies love DZ, good looking kid, all this shit. So I was always busting his balls. Like, it was nice to be sitting there. You might get some scraps or something, you know, like all these chicks. But no, seriously, we're walking back, Riles, and my place was, even, you know where I live.
Yeah, sure.
Philly, like a 10-minute walk to the park, maybe. And so we're walking back, and we're coming down the road, and this girl in the street, and she's like, good looking girl, you know, like, while as we're walking up, we're just like, oh, she looks cool. Like, she looks good looking girl. Like, she had little Lulu tights on, you know, little shorts, little tanky tank top on, you know, getting closer. We're like, damn, she's pretty hot. Course, oh my god, are you Michael Del Zotto? And I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake, like, what the fuck, man. And it was so funny, like, so, you know, can I take a picture? Like, yeah, that's cool. It was so funny, man. Mike was with us that day, Riggs. I don't know where you were, but fuck, he is one of the, you remember Mike, obviously one of the funniest guys you'll ever meet. Jesus. But that was, yeah, it was nice. He was close by. And even back then, DZ, you were cooking for the fellas. And I mean, you weren't like, you're an old guy, but he was always
when I moved out of Rittenhouse and then moved to South Philly there, and I had that townhouse, I was having guys over all the time. And it was fun, like, especially when the Schenner brothers were there. Fuck, those guys like to eat.
Always
request, like, my
they like the muck. Cooking. They like the muck. They like
to muck it up.
They'd always request my ribs. It was like kind of my famous dish, and they fall right off the bone. And it always requests. So every time they come over, like, hey, ribs, ribs, ribs. When I see them to this day, like, we're in warm-up, they're like, hey, man, like, how are the ribs? How are they?
Come on.
Whenever I see them, it's so funny. It's like that was like kind of our thing. But no, I loved it because Philly is great for restaurants, but, you know, it didn't go out a ton. And I just, to me, that's my favorite thing is going on the road, either for dinner or at home, you have a bunch of the guys over. It's just very like relaxed environment.
Yeah.
You cook, you hang out there. There's no rush to get in or out. You know, you're private. You don't have to worry about anyone around, and you just openly talk, get to know each other on a personal level. Mm-hmm. It's, sometimes at the rink, it's a little bit too uptight where you're always talking strategy or systems or whatever you may be talking about hockey. Whereas you get guys away from the rink, it's nice to know them on a personal level because as you know, more so you, Nasty, as we know, like as you get out of the game, it's like, yeah, are there great memories through hockey for sure, but it's the relationships and the friendships you make over time that those last a lifetime, right? And that's what I think is the coolest part about the game is you have guys from all over the world, all different types of upbringing, all different types of plans or future endeavors, and then you're able to mesh your lives together and keep in touch. And it may not be often, it may be over the phone, or maybe meeting a guy on vacation, or if you're on vacation, they live there. And I think that's a truly special thing about our game. It just allows you to adapt and learn about so many different cultures and you know, places where players may be from.
Yeah, for sure.
A nice little connection with the players are too, when you're actually like making the food yourself, you know what I mean? Like you're like, well, I guess you're a younger guy when you were cooking in Philly and whatnot, but you know, you're still a young guy, but you know, you're one of the older guys and, you know, the younger guys look up to that. Cause it's easy to just go to the restaurants and get the bottle of vino and, you know, order all that stuff in. But like, there's probably a little bit more of a special component to it when you're going over to the veteran's house and he's cooking you dinner. And it's not just like spaghetti and meatballs. Like you're maybe it is, but I mean, you're obviously doing it up a little bit better since that's not the part of the keto at all.
Yeah, right.
But they, you know, they're learning something from you. They're appreciating, you know, you're preparing it. And obviously the connection with you as an older guy and whatnot. So I think that's pretty special.
Yeah. We had a great group then too. I miss those days. Like we had such a special group, such a fun group of guys that, not just at the rink, but outside the rink, some of the, you know, the younger guys are the single guys, and you know, still to this day, Raf, Lots, some of my best buddies. And it's fun seeing now Lots being a veteran guy, and I see him in the summer quite a bit. And like he's cooking, and it's like now we're talking about things that happened. You know, Philly was seven years ago, and similar to the thing with Tor, it's like it's great to see guys that have now matured and lived through the game and got that experience now. And now you see kind of what you were trying to teach, you know, a few years ago, and now they're the veteran and now they're passing it on to the next generation. So it's kind of cool. The domino effect.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I know Lots pretty well, and speaking with him and having coached him, in the Phantoms in the minor leagues and, you know, his up and down the early parts of his NHL career. Nice to see him, like you just said, like mature, grow, and then now guys are looking up to him, and he's a wise, you know, say he's a wise young hockey player that guys look up to. He's, you know, progressive in his thinking, and it's nice to see guys go that way, because a lot of guys, you know, can go the other way too, right? It's like the pressure gets to them, and you never really find yourself, and then you're kind of like always, you know, in and out, and you never really kind of find your ground and find consistency. So, you know, it's nice to see, especially when you can see it like passed down from veterans. You know what I mean? I think that's super important when veterans can really teach the guys some real substance, right? It's more about living and taking care of yourself than it is anything hockey. I mean, they'll figure out the hockey part because they're skilled, right? I mean, they've been doing that since they were 4 years old. So that's the stuff that, to me, as we do these podcasts, we talk about more and more of these to guys, you know, JVR and some of these older guys that, you know, it's just interesting to see how they figure it out and how they stay in the league and how they understand their bodies more and how they're able to pass that down and be a mentor really to their teammates. So you're doing amazing stuff. I, you know, salute you for all that.
Yeah, for sure.
Try. Got to pass it down to the next generation. Right? And hopes that culture still stays present, unfortunately.
Well, yeah. Right. Yeah. We talk about that a lot. Yeah, the culture, right? You go from like the broad street bullies and the culture, and you know, the from a lot of drinking to a lot of money and resources going into training and recovery and taking care of yourself, right? I mean, you're trying to extend your career, and how, you know, whether you like it or not, it's changing. You know, more guys are focused on recovery instead of just going out and get banged up and, you know, and spending the whole morning trying to recover from their hangover. I mean, there's still a little bit of that going on.
Yeah, but that still exists when the opportunity presents itself. And I think that's such a big part of the game, is those are the best, like those are the best memories that you have. It's like, hey, remember that time, you know, we had a day off and we went and played golf, or we had dinner and we went out together. And like that's where you develop that camaraderie and that chemistry within. And I'm all for, of course, as we've talked about, I'm all for the recovery and that side of, and how advanced nutrition, technology, everything has come that's very present in our game. But at the same time, I think there still needs to be that other side available as well. Cause now guys are bringing their fucking video games on the road, playing games all night and ordering room service, as opposed to going out for dinner and spending 100% time with your team and developing that side. So I think there needs to be some type of middle ground. Unfortunately, it's wavering a little too far to the video game, the Fortnite side now.
Yeah. And that's to me, that doesn't even seem like part of the formula at all. Right. I mean, it's like you're talking about recovery versus, like, you know, back in the day going out and getting shit faced every night. Well, I think it's just the guys are more selective, you know, and picking their spots. And then, like you said, like you go out as a team and you have that, you know, that hurrah type of night and have some fun and storytelling, whatever else. But I see it in the minor leagues too, like so much, you know, screen time and games and stuff like that. To me, that was never even part of the formula. It was, you know, that's just like something completely separate, a totally separate issue, really. It's nothing to do with life and or recovery and or performance, really.
It brings up, sorry, Nasa, is Robin, this reminded me of this epic story. When we were in Philly, we had whatever it was, like All-Star break or whatever it was. And me, Raf, and Lots went to where did we go that one? I don't know if that one was we went Mexico house. 1 year. We went Mexico 1 year, but the house was Dominican, just me and Raf. And then another year, just me and Raf went to Turks. And whatever, we go there, obviously we're on vacation. It was like 3 nights. We're drinking all day, all night, you know, enjoying ourselves. And when we're together, we obviously have a great time. The three of us are just nonstop abusing each other, just chirping each other, like gutless, just going at it. So anyways, we get back and we have like a bag skate the first day, and Raph's like a full length behind everyone. We're doing like down and backs, and like, you know, you're finished your down and back, and this guy's still working on the first length. Like, Raph's like, he's in good shape and he's like a phenomenal skater, very efficient skater. We're like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? So he goes to Jimmy Recross, and the trainer is like, hey, like, something's wrong. I'm not feeling well. I couldn't skate out there. I couldn't move like my chest. He kept complaining about like his chest, like breathing. And Jimmy's like, here, like, take a NyQuil tonight. Like, get a good night's sleep. You probably didn't sleep, you know, the whole trip. You'll be fine. Come back tomorrow. Same thing. Couldn't fucking breathe. Couldn't do anything. Find out he partied so hard, he had pneumonia. So he's out for 3 weeks. You go on a nice little All-Star break, and like, I'm like I guess we're the same age, but like, I, you know, the more veteran guy as far as games, that he come back and like, hey, Deli, what'd you do to the guy? Fuck, that guy's got pneumonia. I can't even play. This is 2 weeks of the season, 2 or 3 weeks of the season. I'm like, fuck, that wasn't a good look. No. Those guys, man, we had so much fun together. Those three guys, some of the best memories I've had.
I remember a few of the pictures that you guys sent me. I was jealous, to say the least. That I wasn't there. That's for sure.
We had a good time. He somehow drove the golf cart that came with the property into our pool too. I don't know.
Oh, wow, that's impressive.
That was out of commission for the trip.
I was gonna say, talking about going back to like guys doing the video games and shit. A couple of years ago, we were in Arizona and talking to my buddy, the coach, Rick Tockett. And he's like, fuck, man. Like, you know, trying to get the boys going in there. He's like, you know, I was all excited this yesterday morning. I walk in, a couple of the young guys are just, they're going at it. I'm like, fuck yeah. They're ribbing each other, you know, like fucking. And he's like, hey, what's going on? What happened? And he's like, oh, last night he snipered me like on the, and he goes, what? And he goes, oh, fuck off. Yeah, right. And I'm dying. I said, dude, we got guys bringing headsets. And
oh, yeah. Special headsets with the microphones. Yeah. Look like the fucking pilots on the birds. It's like, come on.
You know, come on, talks old school. He's like, cheap. Yeah. He's like, what the fuck are you guys talking about, man? Okay. Like, so funny, though. I remember also, DZ, we were on a road and I think we had the next day off. We're in Calgary. And we had something set up, and I just said to DZ, I got to go, dude, you know, hang the gear. Maybe I might have had like two guys skate, yeah, like, but we had a day off. It was the next day, was the day off. Anyway, I said, DZ, save me a spot. He got set up with a booth by one of our friends. And so I get there, and there's a young lady waiting on the tables. Good looking woman. Didn't know her. But she was there waiting on it. Weezy was with us, our boy Weezy, Dale Weese, fucking funnier and shit. And these two are so lippy. It was so much fun because just back and forth, just being a smart ass, but all in good fun. So I come up, I get there. I'm like, you know, a little after these guys, and they've had a couple drinks. And so the waitress comes over and she goes, oh, are you joining them? I'm like, yeah. So there was still an empty seat beside DZ. Right. And, she goes, oh, and he goes, well, why don't you join us? You know, like, just take off and you can join us and sit with the boys here. And she goes, oh, I can't. I got to work. She goes, I thought you must have someone else going. He goes, no, it's actually for my wallet. That spot, yeah. You know, he was obviously just fucking around. He was just being funny, but I literally spit part of my drink out just because even from him, I knew he was just kidding, but. It was saying she laughed her fucking every time she goes, I can't stop thinking about that comment. Fucking Weezy.
That's right.
That's a good one.
We see that, like, me and him, that's like we're the best for that because we would say the most ridiculous shit, like stuff that would make you just shake your head, but we would always just try to say something to see if we could make the other guy like actually shake their head because all the time just stupid shit. He's the best for that, those types of lines.
Yeah,
he has his little chauffeur hat on.
Yeah, exactly.
He was one of my favorites, man.
When you said that, though, my God, I died. I was like, that's one of the funniest things ever. So just the way to set it. Yeah, she was just like, at first, it took her a second.
Yeah, to process that.
Yeah, you got to know your crowd, too, right? Yeah. You got to know if you can throw something like that in there. And
some of my drink.
She was cool. Like, we were just saying ridiculous lines, and she was loving the humor or making jokes back and forth.
That was funny, man. I never forget. I always say that. That one just always stuck with me. It was so funny. But Riles?
Yeah, I was going to say, switching gears just a little bit. The King, Henry Lundqvist, retiring. I mean, you obviously spent some time, parts of 6 years with the guy. Talk about him as a player, but more importantly, as a human.
He was, first as a player, he was still to this day, the most competitive player I've ever played with. He would treat practice like it was game seven. If you score on him in practice, he would lose his mind. And I was like a young kid, like full of shit back then. Like, was always talking shit, and I'd score and I'd excel. And the next thing you know, like a puck would come flying by you. Like he'd fire pucks at you if you sell.
That's old school.
Practice. Ron Hextall.
That's like Boosh too, isn't he?
Crazy.
Yeah,
Boosh. He was like so competitive, but that's what made him, you know, the goalie he was. And playing in front of him for the time I did, for those that many years, was so amazing, knowing that you had a goalie like him behind you. Like, the amount of times he would bail you out, you know, that was in his prime. He was fucking unbelievable. The saves he would make. Sometimes you'd be on the bench or even on the ice, you're like, wow. Like, you'd have to stop. Almost you stop yourself from playing and just like admire some of the saves he would make. And I mean, to be nicknamed the King.
Yeah.
In New York City, right.
At MSG, you know, one of, if not the most famous arena in the world, tells you everything you need to know about him. Like, that guy ran that city. And the funniest thing about him is, like, he'd be wearing three pieces of practice.
Yeah.
By that time, like, I was 19. I'm just wearing like, you know, sweatsuits to practice, like super casual, like whatever, you get in. And then afterwards, if you're going out for dinner, obviously change. But this guy was like, it was a GQ shoot every single day this guy came to the rink. And that's where I learned. I'm like, fuck, like, I had to step my game up.
Right, yeah.
I worked a thing with him, DZ, in Atlantic City for Bauer. They would bring all their things, all the guys that, you know, their big names, like Patrick Kane, Jonathan Taves, Carter, guys from all over the league. And the King came the one night, or the one trip, and he changed three times a day.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
He had I swear to God, he came into breakfast the first day and it was like, dude, he had on like, it almost didn't matter what he had on, 'cause it was him, but he had on like this perfect button down shirt. Looked like it definitely was tailored. Like, oh, I mean, he couldn't have fit him in. It was like Kovalev, right? Riggs with his hair.
Yeah,
like,
perfect gear. Yeah, perfect. Yeah.
So he comes walking in. His hair is just perfect. He's got this his button up short sleeve, these sick jeans on it, and then like Chuck Taylor's, but he just looked just sick, man. And I remember he came in and it was early too. It was like eight, you know, like breakfast was like 8 a.m. And I think it was Jonathan Taves looked at him and said, "Do you just wake up and look like that?" And he's like, "Pretty much." You know,
pretty much.
Like, yeah. He was kidding, but like he was probably not kidding, but he was kidding. And I swear to God, we'd go. So you had to go to the rink, or some guys had to go do like a video shoot of them like putting their gear on, because it's all the new stuff for the following season, for the next season. And go back for lunch, he had a totally different outfit on.
Oh, yeah.
And then at dinner, he's like, really got, he's dressed to the nines. I mean, it was unbelievable. Like for 3 days, I saw this and I'm like, how big is, like, how many suitcases did you bring? Like, 'cause he actually came from Sweden to this thing, 'cause he had gone home for the summer, I guess. But anyway, like DZ said, the 3-piece suit does not surprise me, man.
Insane. And he was a very, very nice guy, like a great teammate, super competitive. Two things about him though, like whenever he'd lose in a shootout, he would freak the fuck out. We lost in a shootout, it was guaranteed he'd come back in the room, and for what, I don't know for why, it was always the soap dispenser, but this was when MSG had done the renovation. There's just he'd only shower in this one shower, and the soap dispenser, every time we lost in a shootout, you'd come back and it would be on the floor, and he would beat the piss out of this thing every single time. I don't know what the soap dispenser had to do with the shootout. But that was always take it out on that. And then his workouts were the best. He'd get the big stability ball and he'd do like his sit-ups. He'd just do his sit-ups and then you'd do push-ups. The only workout I've ever seen him do.
All core.
He was like,
not a big, right?
Yeah, exactly. He needed that perfect 30 waist for his, Oh yeah.
That's fun. You know, he's talking about shootouts with him. I don't know if there's another goalie, but I never noticed like a goalie literally like have guys come do breakaways on him. And before a game, I couldn't believe that.
Yeah.
Like, it was amazing. I'm like, dude, like you would think he wouldn't want that as a goalie, but he stayed out there at the end. Riles, I'm sure you saw too when you played, but
yeah,
have guys are just coming down doing breakaways. Like, yeah.
Most starters are off with like 4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Not taking breakaways.
So, yeah. And the last 2 minutes is breakaways. Crazy.
It blew me away.
And it was like it was almost like fans would come to watch that as if it was the game. Because the one end at MSG, and then you'd always have like the celebs and the supermodels behind the bench. That's another story. And everyone would gather right behind the net, and they were like, they would wait for the shootout. And they'd be like, because guy, you know, at that time we had Zuccarello, who was a shootout wizard. And it was like almost an all-star game for fans to come watch and see what moves would happen or like big saves he would make. So it's
crazy,
kind of very unique that for him to do that.
Part of the marketing, you know, when you're the king, you got to go above and beyond, and you got to get people to buy into that you're the king. So put on a show
for nothing. Yeah,
I'm sure it was calculated somewhat.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially there's all his outfits and everything like that. You know, he knew the eyes were on him, so he wanted to make sure that he put together a nice little product for the people.
He did that for a long time, man.
Yeah, right. It's pretty impressive.
It's a shame he has to, you know, this heart thing had to, you know, end it for him. It's a shame he couldn't do it on his own, you know. But
give it an honest chance.
Take the unfortunate health issues. I'm almost glad he never played a game for Washington, because I think, not to say it affects his legacy, but I think playing for one team for as long as he did as a goalie, the records he has, and not playing somewhere else, I think makes it that much more special, right?
I agree.
Kind of like Tom Brady in a way, where he's going to the Bucks and he's still, and you're so impressive that he won. But I think playing for one team for that long, especially in sports now, is unheard of.
Yeah.
Well, I think it makes it that much cooler if you're able to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to go and play one season, which probably wouldn't have been anything besides just like trying to play, you know, it wouldn't really do its justice of actually hopping on a team and actually being a big part of the team's success.
Exactly. Unless they went on a run and possibly won. But I think anything less of the Stanley Cup win would have been like, you would think twice about it, right?
100%.
Yeah, right. 100%. Yeah. Well, BZ, we chewed up a lot of your day here, man. And really appreciate your time, buddy. I miss you. Love you. Can't wait to finally, hopefully, knock wood, this shit settles down.
Yeah.
And we get to see you here soon.
Thanks, boys, for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
Now, so hit you up when I'm back in Philly, and hope to see you. Where's Elvis? He jumped in for a second, then he left.
Dude, he's mad at me.
Little Houdini.
Is he wheeling and dealing on the street right now? What's he doing?
He came in, and he's got a full sleeve tattoo. He's got some on his chest. Now, they're fake, obviously. Just put on all these tattoos. That's what he was trying to jump in here. He was trying to get high so you could see them all. I don't know where he is now. He's probably out working the neighbor's daughter. 14.
16-year-old daughter.
Yeah, exactly. He told me he has our normal sitters just went back to college. So we have a new one. That was her first time. And he did not want me to leave the house the other night. And she rings the doorbell. I open it up. And right away, he just get the smile and he goes, "Hey, I'm Elvis." She's like, "Hey, I'm Julie." He goes, "Come on, come down here. I'll show you the basement, my drum kit and all this shit." Like, there he goes. he didn't even say bye to me. There he goes. And later. He says, so the next morning I got back rather late. I'm not sure why, but I got back kind of late. So he was asleep. And the next morning I said, "Hey, how'd everything go with the new sitter?" He goes, "I think I'm in love." I'm like, "What?" He's like, "Yeah, I think I'm in love." And I said, "Okay, all right, that's good. At least we know we got one we can use for a while." Yeah. Anyway, until he says something stupid, freaks her out. But
it's not true love.
Yeah, exactly. So, but anyway, thanks again, DZ, man. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks for having me, fellas. I appreciate it.
Great to see you. Good luck this season. That episode was brought to you by Settlemyer Skate Sharpening, SettlemyerSkateSharpening.com. Check them out for all your hockey needs, or visit Nasty for the best grind in town, and Body Check Wellness for all your hemp-derived CBD and functional mushroom needs. Currently running a Labor Day sale for 50% off with $100 and over on your order. So check it out, BodyCheckWellness.com, and thank you to Michael Delzato. DZ.
And DZ, DJ Delzato.
We're hopping on. It's great to reconnect.
Yeah.
Nice to see him doing well, re-signing, smile on his face, great shape as always.
New deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when you rip like that, I mean, I'm surprised he ever wears a shirt. I meant to say that to him, too, when we were doing the thing. He used to, I don't know why it slipped my mind, I think because we were just kept talking about different things, but he used to make me laugh because he's pretty ripped up, and he would come in the room and be like, "Boys, if anybody needs to do any laundry later, just let me know." You know, on his stomach, on his washboard. But funny guy, man, great guy, really good to me when he was here in Philly for those few years, and great to catch up with him. And can't wait to see him. Hopefully, everything kind of stays in order, so we'll be able to go to games and actually see our buddies coming to town and stuff like that. So
yeah, no kidding. Yeah, it's nice to see guys that, you know, like I kind of knew or played against when they were younger, and they're, you know, you're very immature, and seeing them grow and then seeing them become like, well, leaders, and then you're learning how to, you know, take care of their bodies, which seems funny because you think that, like, you know, professional athlete, all these guys know how to take care of themselves, which is not the truth. And you know, especially when you're young, you think you're invincible, and you become the older guy and you learn to take care of your body. But then how he's kind of like embodied it, obviously, and then is kind of like the guy that young guys look up to. And then he's getting, you know, more contracts and you know, an opportunity because of that, you know, with winning the Stanley Cup with Chief and, you know, moving on and finding deals because he's, you know, going back to see, you know, work with Tortorella and, you know, seeing how he's evolved and, you know, Tort seeing how he's evolved. It's kind of cool, especially when you kind of, you break it down, you know, from that perspective, because most people don't really
understand that, you know, and some guys never grow right. like that. And then they, you know, their bodies break down, they disappear. And Adam, he's a first round pick, right? Or he's a first round pick. And you know, some guys that are high picks like that, they, I don't know. They once they have those tough seasons, they kind of like fizzle out. So
yeah, I mean, he was, yeah, he was, I remember, you know, I think he had gone to Nashville. And then chemo too. I don't even know if he had a deal in place. I could be wrong. He may have had things going on, but he ended up signing in Philly because chemo had the blood clot issue.
Yeah, that's right.
And then so he ended up staying here. He played well, ended up staying here, obviously. And then, you know, like you said, you know, he explained the whole thing where, you know, he went to Anaheim. He's on three different teams in 1 year. You know, you're probably in your head, you're like, holy cow, like what's going on with my career? I'm training, I'm doing everything right, but he stuck with it and, you know, he just got a nice 2-year deal and I'm sure he's going to be one of the leaders there for, you know, 100%. He will be. So, good for him. And it was great having him on, man.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I'm happy for him. Nice to see him have success and, it was much appreciated that he hopped on, spent the time with us. So that wraps up episode 38 NAST.
Boom, baby.
Tune in next week for episode 39. Until then, take care, knuckleheads.
See you, knuckleheads.